This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union. We've got 125,000 members and 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast Wednesday afternoons at 1:30. We're also now available as a podcast on iTunes. Simply go to the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad and search for DC 37 State of the Union. You can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you have any comments about this show, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. This was some week. Mayor de Blasio has been reelected, along with citywide leaders Letitia James, who kept her public advocate seat, and Comptroller Scott Stringer. And after months of debate, a proposal to hold a constitutional convention was rejected overwhelmingly by New York State voters. Joining us now to talk about the election results, DC 37 Political Action Director Jeremy John. Welcome back to State of the Union, and congratulations, Jeremy.
Thank you very much, Chris. Glad to be here.
Let's talk about what was at stake.
The livelihoods of unions in New York State was at stake, Chris. This year, as you know, the Constitutional Convention comes around every 20 years, and we've made a tremendous amount of gains through the legislative process and through previous conventions, and those gains were put at risk. And with the wave of anti-unionism going across this country, we did not want the Constitutional Convention corrupted by the extremist groups out there that are trying to destroy unions. So protecting our union members, protecting our pensions, protecting public services, that's what was at stake.
And, you know, I mean, it's really quite an accomplishment. I'm looking at the numbers. At the time that this was proposed, the polls showed New Yorkers favoring this by a 2-to-1 margin. And the results are so overwhelmingly opposed to the convention that clearly, in terms of message delivery, we seem to have done our jobs.
I think I think you hit the nail on the head, Chris. Messaging. One of the problems that a ballot initiative like the Constitutional Convention faces is that the majority of New Yorkers have no idea what the Constitutional Convention is and what is in the Constitution and the rights that they have in the Constitution. So that is my belief that that lack of knowledge, that lack of awareness led to that 2-to-1 margin at the beginning of the year. But as the year progressed, as unions and community groups and activists and the activist community began to engage New Yorkers on every level, they became educated about the dangers that exist within the Constitutional Convention.
And the coalition that was built around this issue on our side consisted of conservatives and liberals. I mean, it was a very diverse group of folks who were all committed to one thing, which was keeping the protections of the Constitution, correct?
Correct, protecting the Constitution. We had groups like Planned Parenthood. We had groups like NRA, like these, there are a host of groups, both conservative and progressive, who came together to fight back and beat back some of the things that they felt and we felt would be endangered. This was not simply about one segment of the New York voting public. This was a broad coalition, a broad-based coalition that was geared towards protecting the rights of all New Yorkers.
And, you know, there has been this attack. You mentioned it, that there's been an attack on labor for some time now. And the energy that was shown in this campaign really speaks to the membership and how the members feel about their rights in the year 2017, with everything that's going on around us.
Yeah, and that was the beautiful part of what happened this entire year. We began our campaign to push back against the ConCon back in December of 2016. And as we began to talk and we began to engage membership, we saw, it's like the light bulb went off in their heads, and they saw the thing, because they're so aware of the sentiments that are out there against unions, the attacks that labor is facing. The light bulb went off, and they wanted to fight, and they wanted to join our endeavor to push back against the Constitutional Convention. It was a great thing to see, particularly on Election Day, particularly the weeks leading up to Election Day, the hundreds of thousands of union members that mobilized across the state to fight for their rights and protect their rights and their families.
Can we talk about any of the tactics we've been using that may be different from the past in terms of political acumen and strategery?
So this was quite a unique year, right? We did both internal member-to-member messaging, and then we were part of, like I mentioned before, a broad-based coalition that was geared towards the general public. And, you know, the evolution of campaigning has jumped leaps and bounds from the days of just knocking on doors and handing out flyers at train stations and visibility locations. This year, not only did we utilize mail, not only did we utilize phone calls, we had a heavy social media presence on all of the social media apps, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. It was out there. We had television commercials. We had radio commercials going on, and that was all based on the geared towards the general public. Now, when we're talking about our membership, we utilized some of those same tactics. We had a broad social media plan that spoke directly to our members in their homes and at their workplace. We were knocking doors since July to talk to our members to educate them about, one, the dangers of the Constitutional Convention and the things that they can do to push back, educate their family, educate their friends, their if they're a part of any religious institutions, to talk to their fellow parishioners. We had an amazing program that was driven by our membership. The boots on the ground were actually members of our union. The folks that pushed us and that won this fight was the men and women of DC 37.
Well, and you know, we're talking about taking modern technology, but we're also talking about going back to basics, which is there is no way to do anything in terms of organizing, in terms of political activity, in terms of negotiations. The participation of members is so critical to the work and to representing working families across the city and the state.
Absolutely. There's no better person to tell a story to a union member than a fellow union member. They work in the same locations. They have the same experience with management. They have the same experiences in their communities. They can tell the story better than any staff person, better than any political consultant, better than any campaign operative or professional. The members are what, they are our union, and they know the issues better than we give them credit for. They have the will, they have desire to protect their rights, and that's what we did. We fostered an environment where we can have our members engage in a real proactive way to educate and speak to other members about the dangers that existed this year. And it was phenomenal, the participation level. It was phenomenal, the excitement and the zeal that every one of the our members brought to our program.
DC 37 Political Action Director Jeremy John, man, thanks very much for coming on. And we're going to talk about the future in the near future.
It's always a pleasure, Chris. Thank you very much.
All right. We'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today, 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. On Thursday, November 2nd, two news websites, DNA Info and The Gothamist, were suddenly shut down by their billionaire owner after workers at the site voted to unionize. Last Monday, the out-of-work journalists, joined by DC 37 activists and several elected officials, held a protest rally at City Hall Park. Here's a quick soundbite from the head of the Writers Guild East. Let's take a listen.
I'm Lowell Peterson, Executive Director of the Writers Guild of America East. I want to start out by saying we are not here to mourn. We are here to organize. The Writers Guild of America East has organized 700 digital journalists in the last 3 years. There is a massive movement of support for collective bargaining in this part of the industry. Out of those 700, there's only one shop that's been shut down, and that happens to be the shop that's owned by a right-wing billionaire. Do the math. We are here to hear from elected officials, union leaders, and by the affected journalists themselves. We will not stand for this. We will fight back by whatever means we can come up with. This is a very clear ideological gambit on the part of Joe Ricketts. We have got no reason to think that a rational business person would shut down a business that's making money. What Joe Ricketts has decided to do is to blame his employees and to blame the union that represents his employees. Shame on you, Joe. Come clean, tell the truth, and stop fighting your employees' right to collectively bargain.
Joining us by phone now to explain what's going on is Hamilton Nolan, who recently wrote a terrific piece about the events in the New York Times. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Who is Joe Ricketts?
Joe Ricketts is a bad man who is a billionaire and is the founder of TD Ameritrade, a successful financial company. His family owns the Chicago Cubs. One of his sons, I believe, is the governor of Nebraska, if I'm not mistaken. And he is generally a huge Republican donor and political power broker, right-wing billionaire, who also happened to own DNA Info.
Now, DNA Info is a website that has been around for a number of years. It's been losing money for most of that time. The Gothamist was another website that was not losing money. But both are owned by Ricketts. 27 employees voted to organize. And,
yes.
And then what happened?
Then he essentially shut down the entire operation. So the DNA Info and Gothamist employees had actually a really long struggle to unionize, and they were very committed to it. They were really kind of inspirational in the sense that they struggled with the company for a long time, trying to get the company to recognize their union. Joe Ricketts refused to recognize the union. He is ideologically opposed to unions and has said that over and over again. And essentially, after the company refused to recognize their union voluntarily, those employees pushed through to an election. They won the election 25 votes to 2, I believe. And a couple days after they won the union election, Joe Ricketts proceeded to shut down the entire company. So he shut down not just these 27 employees who had voted to unionize, but more than 100 employees across America, including in lots of places that were not even included in the union. So he essentially took his ball and went home.
As the headline of the New York Times, of your New York Times op-ed piece, a billionaire destroyed his newsrooms out of spite. There is also, I just want to read a little bit from your article, if you don't mind. It is worth being clear about exactly what happened here. DN Info was not profitable, but Mr. Ricketts was happy to invest in it for 8 years, praising its work all along. Gothamist, on the other hand, was profitable and a recent addition to the company. 1 week after the New York team unionized, Mr. Ricketts shut it all down. He did not try to sell the company to someone else. Instead of bargaining with 27 unionized employees in New York City, he chose, as you just said, to lay off 115 people across America. As a final thumb in the eye, he initially pulled the entire site's archives down. They are now back up, so his newly employed workers lost access to their published work. Then, presumably, he went to bed in his $29 million apartment. Digital journalists have been organizing. You were in the forefront of that, I believe, having done an organizing effort of your own. Let's talk about that a little bit. What's going on in the world of digital, and what makes Mr. Ricketts' activity so abhorrent?
Yeah, so I mean, about 2 years ago, my colleagues and I at Gawker Media, which was a pretty fairly large and successful digital media company, we unionized with the Writers Guild East. And after we unionized with them, something like 10 other places in digital media have proceeded to unionize themselves in the last couple of years. So it's really been a, kind of a wave sweeping through the industry. And, digital media is an industry that's sort of a lot of jobs that used to be in the newspaper industry are now in the online media just because the media is changing. And the newspaper industry was widely unionized. A lot of those jobs have moved online. And so this is sort of a process of unionizing the industry where the media jobs are now. And, there's been a lot of work by the Writers Guild as well as the News Guild to unionize our industry. But I think that, the fundamental reason why it's sort of sweeping through the industry in the way it is because journalists are smart enough to look at the situation and say, this is obviously a good idea. I mean, the arguments in favor of unionization are so powerful that I think that's really what's driving it through our industry. And, in the course of the past couple of years, there have been, there's been a variety, some places have accepted it, as our management did and sort of gone along with it and been very good faith about the process. Other places have tried to wage anti-union campaigns. Some of those sort of broke down once they got bad publicity because a lot of media executives like to see themselves as sort of socially liberal. And when they start getting bad publicity for running anti-union campaigns, sometimes they back down. In the case of Joe Ricketts, he doesn't see himself as socially liberal. He doesn't care about that. He hates unions. And, he really, really waged a tough and pretty nasty battle against his own workers. And, you know, nobody has done what Joe Ricketts did. I mean, it's the argument that his move was just a pure economic one is ridiculous, because you can look across our entire industry and see already a lot of examples of successful places that are already unionized and are already working under union contracts. And also, you know, obviously the journalists at DNA Info and Gothamist don't have an incentive to bankrupt their own company.
Right. Of course not. Of course not.
Yeah.
So there has always been, listen, rich people have always been involved with media, right? I mean,
yeah.
The New York Post is owned by a billionaire. The Daily News was owned by a billionaire.
Yeah.
You know, Citizen Kane was a billionaire. but the idea that, you know, for years, newspapers and other news organizations have had unions in them. And if digital is the wave of the future, and if owners like Ricketts can just say, as you say, well, I'm going to take my marbles and go home, that does not bode well once again in our country in 2017. Working men and women are getting the short end of the stick.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. And, you know, the silver lining is that most people who own media outlets are not Joe Ricketts, right? I mean, there is definitely a strong streak of, you know, a lot of people who are either the top management of these media outlets or the owners of these media outlets like to believe that they are engaged in the public good. You know, they are sort of helping to do journalism, which is a public good, and they have a general sort of do-gooder liberal sensibility. I mean, they're obviously business people also, but, you know, a lot of times when you really hold up to the light the hypocrisy between union busting and what they claim to be doing, that's a powerful tool, you know, for the workers to help get the unions in place. So, I mean, you know, Joe Ricketts is an outlier, thankfully, and I don't think that people should be scared to unionize their own shops because of what Joe Ricketts did. And actually, you know, the people from Gothamist and DNA Info will be the first ones to tell you that, you know, this really only strengthened their resolve that they did the right thing.
And tell me a little bit now. Now you are the you are a senior writer at Splinter.
Mm-hmm.
What's Splinter?
Splinter is, you know, we unionized Gawker Media, and then shortly after we unionized, we were proceeded to be bankrupted by Peter Thiel, another vindictive Republican billionaire who funded a lawsuit by Hulk Hogan, which bankrupted our entire company. So we were then bought by Univision. Gawker.com was shut down, which was the site that I wrote for. And some of us were moved over to a site that Univision already had called Fusion, which then rebranded as Splinter. So that's a long way of saying I essentially still have the same job, but under a different company.
And where? Okay, so it's Splinter.com?
Splinternews.com.
Splinternews.com, where you are the senior writer. And with all that, the moving and the issue, what you're saying is do not be afraid of Joe Ricketts. He is not an indication of he is an anomaly more than he is a trend.
He's absolutely an anomaly in online media in our industry. And, you know, even in the media in general, when you start looking at big media companies and, you know, public companies and the most cutthroat capitalists in America, I mean, at the end of the day, there's a demand for media. A lot of media companies are making a lot of money right now. It's actually a great time for the media business. And if you work at a media company that's not unionized, you know, you are losing out in some ways because of that. So This is actually a great time to unionize. If you're in online media, you know, there's an entire industry that will stand behind you. And if you're in any part of the media, it's just basic common sense, I think.
You think there's any chance that DNA Info or Gothamist can come back, or is it gone?
I hope so. I mean, I know that some of those people have been having discussions about their next move and if they can resurrect it in some way. If there's a new financial model, maybe a more of a public interest model that might be able to fund that, because you know, local journalism is one of those things that kind of slipped between the cracks of the media industry as it's gone online. I mean, it's very hard to find examples of financially successful local journalism outlets, even though, you know, the demand for local journalism, we all want to read local journalism. It's just that people are having a hard time figuring out a model that will fund it. So, but I do know that, yes, those people are discussing that, and I think everybody should keep an eye out for whatever they do next, and we should all get behind them.
Well, that's a huge thing, because if you're not if you're not holding folks accountable on the local level, and there are no media to do that, that's bad for everybody, is it not?
Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, it's you know, local journalism is probably the most legitimate, like, public good section of journalism. I mean, it's the least controversial, you know, no matter what your politics are, what you feel about controversial issues, you know, we can all agree that there should be somebody covering the school board. There should be somebody covering the city council. There should be somebody covering issues that come up in neighborhoods. And when you lose that journalism, you know, if you're Joe Ricketts and you shut down DNA Info, it's not just losing jobs, it's you're losing all those stories. And that's a lot of problems that are not going to be solved because nobody's paying attention to them anymore.
Hamilton Nolan is senior writer at splinternews.com. His Twitter feed is at Hamilton Nolan. The piece in the Times, if you're next to a computer and you can Google, it's called "A Billionaire Destroyed His Newsrooms Out of Spite." And it was in the New York Times on November 3rd, 2017. Hamilton, thank you very much for joining us. And
thank you.
And the struggle continues, bro.
Thanks a lot, man.
Okay.
Stay tuned. All right.
Thank you. That's just about all the time we've got on this week's program. Before we go, a couple of announcements. If you have federal student debt, find out how to erase it by attending a workshop Tuesday, November 14th at 5:30 p.m. at Union Headquarters. You can register online by going to www.dc37.net/student-debt. And Mel's reminds you that they provide legal representation to members when applying for citizenship. Mel's is the Municipal Employee Legal Services. And for more information about the work that they do and how they may be able to help you, call 212-815-1818. I want to thank our guests, DC 37 Political Action Director Jeremy John and Splinter Senior Writer Hamilton Nolan, for joining us. If you have any comments about today's show, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. The producer is Rudy Orozco. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. I'm Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.